Hey everyone, this amazing ESO Network show is brought to you by our fine sponsor, Amazon.com. Please remember to shop Amazon for all your geeky needs, no matter what time of the year it is. All you need to do is go to ESOpodcast.com/ESOAmazon or click on the Amazon banner on the ESO Network webpage to go to our e-store. It's the best way to shop and the best way to support this program, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. Okay, that's enough of me babbling for now. Now on with your regular scheduled show.
You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Ian, look at this.
What, it's a police box. What on earth is he doing here? Hey, these things are usually on the street. I feel it. Feel it, you feel it?
It's a faint vibration.
It's alive.
Earth Station Who, a fun mashup celebrating nearly 50 years of the Doctor Who universe. Hold tight. You never know where the TARDIS is going next.
Geronimo!
Doctor?
I am not a good man. I am not a bad man. I am not a hero. I'm definitely not a president. And no, I'm not an officer. You know what I am? I am an idiot with a box and a screwdriver.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the Earth Station Who podcast. We are here live at Dragon Con. Yeah. And we got a great crowd here, and we are talking all about the 50th anniversary of the Cybermen, which is kind of ironic, especially how Doctor Who ended this last season. Ties right into that. So we are going to be talking all about that. You can, for those at home, write us or call us. You can write us at eswpodcast@gmail.com, or you could call us at 404-963-9057. We want to get your input as well as the fine people here at Dragon Con, the Britrex. So let us introduce everyone, and of course, we're going to go right to left from my side. So right here, let's start with Sue.
Hi, my name is Sue. I'm one of the co-hosts of the Women at Warp podcast. We are a feminist Star Trek podcast, thank you, on the Roddenberry Podcast Network. And I also have cards up here for Saber Guild. You've probably heard of the 501st or Rebel Legion. Saber Guild is the theater kids of the Star Wars universe. So we have both Sith and Jedi, and we put on shows and go to children's hospitals and cons and raise money for children's hospitals. So if you're interested in Saber Guild, check that out too.
And next we have Michael.
Hi, I'm Michael Faulkner. I'm a writer and podcaster from here in the Atlanta area. I run the weekly Podioplex podcast on the Chronicrift Network, which is a movie news podcast. More relevant to this track, I'm also the author of The Timestamps Project, which is a look at Doctor Who from the very beginning. And I'm watching every one of those episodes in order and blogging about them on Creative Criticality, my blog.
Just for you, too.
Yeah.
Because he does it. He sits through even the bad ones.
Yes.
Just for you. How far have you gotten so far?
I just published before Dragon Con Arc of Infinity from season 20. Oh. And when I get home, the next one to go up is Snake Dance.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So, cool. And, of course, to my left, Mr. Howdy himself, Mr. Mike Gordon.
Howdy.
How are you, sir?
This is Dragon Con. This is awesome. We're all awesome. This is the place to be.
It is. It's the who's who and who's what of the geekdom world.
Absolutely.
And especially with the Brit Tracks, who are amazingly awesome to be hosting us.
Absolutely.
And so, it's awesome. And how is going over at Artist Alley?
Artist Alley is fantastic. There's a buzz over there that is just unstoppable. Lots of people, lots of crowds. We like that. People buying stuff, we love that too. So, yes, 3G is my table. So if you find yourself over there in America's Mart at Artist Alley, stop by and say howdy.
Cool. And last but not least.
Hi, everybody. I am Robert Lloyd. I'm a scientist, an artist, a Doctor Who fan since I was about this high. This is my 9th Dragon Con, and I'm always happy to be here and join fine people like these. to talk about Doctor Who and other fun things. And I have nothing of my own to promote, but I would love to tell them more about Hulanta.
Please
if
do.
I can.
Of course.
Well,
we love Hulanta.
As I think Claudette already told you, Hulanta is our local to Atlanta Doctor Who specific, though not Doctor Who exclusive, convention. It happens every year. It was formerly Time Gate. You might have known it under that name. It's the same convention, just regenerated into a slightly different form. And our guests for 2018 are very exciting. First of all, we have Louise Jameson, who played Leela on the show. Huntress and warrior of the Seva team. And they've tried to get her in before, and it hasn't quite worked out. So hopefully third time will be the charm. And just announced today, this one I find really exciting, Rachel Talalay, the director of Capaldi season closers 2 years in a row, including the terrific Hellbent. She directed the movie Tank Girl in the 90s. She's worked on Supergirl and Arrow and The Flash. So that's terrific. One of the big name TV directors working today. Joining us next year. So
and that's
you.
Just a start.
Yeah. Right, yeah.
Oh,
sure
yeah, that's not everybody.
Right, hey, so.
Yeah,
stay
mean,
tuned.
Y'all are there every year.
We
yeah.
are, but yeah. they know that.
Yeah, we're staple. First Station Who is a staple right there.
Absolutely.
You know, it's like it's a foregone conclusion. We always go to Alan, please, please, please invite us back. So it's always a good thing. So we are very excited about Hulanta and even a new hotel for Hulanta this year, too.
That's right, yeah, down by the airport.
Yes, we are at the Hilton at
so,
the airport.
Yeah, and I haven't looked at the map. We might be able to hop right on MARTA to the airport, no?
No, you could take MARTA to the airport, and they have a shuttle from the MARTA station.
How do I get a host hotel room?
Very easy, Cole.
Block the rooms.
Call me. Exactly. So we are here all talking about Cybermen back from 1967. They have been a formal nemesis, and they have gone through multiple evolutions.
They're the, would you say, the third, Doctor Who's third, the Doctor's third biggest enemy?
The first would be the Daleks.
Mm-hmm. Right. Or the Master.
Or the Master.
You could switch. But probably Daleks first, right?
Right.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Daleks first, I think. And it would be almost a toss-up between the Master and the Cybermen.
Oh, you're going that far. Okay.
Yeah. Well, no, because the Cybermen, a lot of times, you know, they're almost more consistent a lot of times than the Master is. Because, you know, the Master is truly the Doctor's Moriarty.
Certainly the Cybermen are older.
Yes.
So they've been around longer than the Master has. Mm-hmm. At least, you know, story-wise.
Yeah.
Right, well, so. According to the season finale, it's kind of the Master who helped create the Cybermen.
Ooh.
Or at least pushed it along. So that also brings that up, and we'll talk all about that. So, of course, the Cybermen, you know, was partly the cause for the Doctor's first regeneration, and then have been pretty much all the way through the 50-odd years of, you know, Doctor Who since they appeared.
All right. Since I don't claim to be the expert, I'm the enthusiast. I am
like
curious.
The enthusiast.
It's me. I'm curious. Maybe someone here knows. Has each Doctor encountered the Cybermen?
No.
No.
Okay. The third did not.
The third did not.
No.
Okay, interesting.
No.
And the eighth did not on TV, but for special reasons.
Yeah. Right.
And
well,
the ninth.
Since he only appeared
on
one. That's
oh,
true.
I guess you could say the War Doctor on television didn't either.
No.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so because I know the third Doctor didn't, because the last time the Cybermen appeared was Invasion. And then they didn't appear back until
Revenge of the Cybermen. Yep. Yeah.
TARDIS Wiki lists the episode Dalek for the Ninth Doctor as being an appearance of the Cybermen.
The Cyberman head.
There was a head, yeah.
Because he looked at the Cybermen head in the case and said, what a great, you know, true warrior race or whatever.
But he didn't fight them.
Exactly.
There was technically an appearance.
He technically faced them.
Look, my biggest fandom is Trek. I will nitpick the crap out of anything.
True story.
And they do.
Yeah.
What was everyone's first, you know, experience with the Cybermen? Sue, what about you?
The new series. Yeah, I was not watching Doctor Who before the new series. Sorry, guys. I actually just started with Doctor Who maybe 4 years ago. Somebody sat me down and put Blink on. And I said, what is this bananas business? And I went back and I started from 9 And then I went back and I started from one.
Wow.
And yeah, not like
Welcome.
This guy.
Yeah, I'm not
going into the depths to find episodes like Faulkner is. But,
I don't think anyone does what Faulkner does.
Yeah.
I am special.
Actually, it's probably longer than 4 years ago now, but more recently than most people expect when they talk to me about Doctor Who. So definitely in the new series. So I guess really my first encounter with the Cybermen was the Borg.
Really?
Because
the Borg are
the Cybermen. They're modeled after the Cybermen.
Oh, very much so. Yeah. And even in a comic book form, they had, you know, Star Trek
The
Next Generation. They teamed up.
That was such a great comic book series.
I thought it was
great, so much.
First great three issues, then the rest we're not talking about. So, yeah. What about you, Michael?
Basically the same story as Sue, really. I started watching Doctor Who with the revival.
Right.
And so it would have been the face-off with Tennant and you know, Sybus, or whatever, what was it, the Sybus system?
The Sybus, yeah.
Yeah. That was my first encounter with them.
Cool.
And then, of course, going back to the Time Stance Project and catching them in order.
Right, of course.
From there, yeah.
It'll be interesting when we get into, you know, what your thoughts on them when you first saw them, you know, because you probably were also a Star Trek person before.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you're like going, oh, these are Borg rules, you know. What about you, Mikey?
I think, because I do remember, because I grew up with Tom, so the Fourth Doctor, but it's weird. I don't remember the story. I mean, we've watched it since then, so I'm familiar with it now. But they do make an appearance in the Five Doctors, correct?
Correct.
Yeah. So I do. I was aware of them, but I think the first time I ever really saw them as like the big bad in a full story was when Ten faced them. For that two-parter.
Mm-hmm.
That was the first time I was like, whoa, this is a full-out Cybermen story.
Right.
Because I skipped a lot of those middle years. So, and then we've gone back and watched several of those and listened to some of the Big Finish stuff and everything like that. So now I'm a lot more familiar with them. But for the longest time, they were not big on my radar.
Okay. What about you, Robert?
Well, for me, it was the Tom Baker story, Revenge of the Cybermen, which is not well remembered. We still have a VHS of it at home, and I watched it a few years back, and man, it's not the worst thing ever, but it's slow. But the neat thing about I mean, I was seven, and it was the only Cybermen story we had in the U.S. for the longest time. But again, I was a seven-year-old, so big silver robot men walking around, I was in. But
the first... The second design of them? Or third?
Third.
Yeah.
I like the design of those.
Because the first ones were the sock puppet, basically.
Right.
With the light bulbs
which
on the top
of their
heads.
Which we see again, right?
I'm sorry. Yeah. Am I the only one who saw that coming a mile away?
We saw what coming a mile away?
Oh, in the final?
In the finale this year. Everybody's caught up, right?
Yeah. Has anyone
this
not
panel
seen
may
season
contain
now?
Spoilers. Where's our son? Yeah, there it is.
Where's Alex? Yeah. Come in.
But I mean, the instant that they walked in, before there was anything on them, and they had like the sock puppet head, I was like, "Oh, this is where we're going."
Mm-hmm.
And then it took another 2 hours to get there. So.
The neat thing about Revenge of the Cybermen, though, that I still love, is the design of the Cybermat that was in that story.
Oh yes,
because before they were kind of cute with their bug eyes and. But this was an eyeless, snake-like creature, and it would glide around the hulls of the space station. And it would leap up and bite your neck and deliver some kind of venom that made Sarah Jane get glowy veins on her and stuff. So that was, and I still think that was a terrific way to handle the cyber mats, which can be kind of goofy if you don't play them just right.
That's okay.
Oh.
Cool.
We need it.
See, for me, it was the same as you guys. It was the Tom Baker episode, because where I grew up, it was the PBS stations showing it at 11 p.m.
Yes.
Every Channel night.
13, New York.
Well, I was actually Washington, D.C. It was PBS. It was the PBA station, and what they did is they showed it in the 30-minute intervals every night, Monday through Friday.
Mm-hmm.
And so we got the true cliffhangers and everything. And I've made it through the first run. I think I started with Talons of Wen Chang and then went back through Robot because I kept on just repeating it until Pledge Drive, and that's when they started showing the Peter Davison stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But it was great to see the Cybermen like that because it was a great introduction to them. You could tell they were, the doctors faced them before he knew who they were. Mm-hmm. And that the whole space station trilogy right there, you know, because it had, you know, the bugs and then it had the Cybermen, then it had the Daleks, and then it had Santarans. Mm-hmm. And it was just like boom, 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 boom. It was just, it was great how that worked. The Cybermen always to me seemed the most threatening, even more than the Daleks, because at the time I was like, ah, Daleks couldn't do stairs. Why, you know, how could you stop them? But the Cybermen were the most.
They could do stairs.
But the Cybermen were what humanity is, was going towards, you know, with artificial hearts and artificial eyes, and, you know, that's what made it almost the most scariest to me, becoming more bionic. You know, basically Steve Austin is a prototype Cyberman, if you think about it. And it's just...
Don't you be knocking Steve Austin, man.
it's we'll not just words. Bionic replacements. I mean, the scariest part about the Cybermen and the villains based on them in other franchises is that they delete you, that they take away your personality, and you just become another Cyberman.
Oh, sure. You're just one of a collective.
Yeah, that's the terror, really.
And there does seem to be this horror behind it where it's almost like your soul is trapped, but it has no release.
Right.
That makes it even more disturbing. It's not as if you're dead and they're just animating a dead body. It's like they take every sense of freedom, personal freedom, away from you, and you're trapped inside this metal shell, not doing anything of your own volition. It's just like when the Cybermen story, like when they tap into that vein, I think they are the most terrifying of the Doctor Who villains.
Yes.
But they don't always successfully tap into that vein. So, and you're right, with Revenge of the Cybermen, they don't even come close.
No. It was more, a lot of times it was more of the new series that more tapped into it.
Yeah.
And the Big Finish.
Yeah.
Adventures. Yeah. That tapped into more of like the trapped souls.
Yeah. There's that, the one I remember from when we first saw Invasion. And there's the crazy one that's just running like crazy around the sewers. He's just like moving around and he has no purpose or no will.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just that for some reason haunted me after we watched that episode. I mean, I thought, yeah, the rest of them are creepy, but just this sort of, he has no direction. He's not tied in with the network and he doesn't know what to do. And he's just wandering around the sewers, this metal, trapped metal soul, and it's just that it was disturbing.
Well, recently on the podcast we reviewed Spare Parts, which
so
is
good.
A Big Finish story.
How many people have listened to Spare Parts?
So okay.
A few of us.
A few.
The rest of you need to.
Some folks may not know what Big Finish is.
Yeah.
How many here who do not know what Big Finish is?
Oh, okay.
They're Doctor Who fans.
Yeah. Big Finish is a series of audios featuring older doctors with brand new stories. And one of the stories, the one I'm talking about, is called Spare Parts. It features Peter Davison as the Fifth Doctor, and he wanders upon Modus, which is basically the planet of the Cybermen, it's basically the origins of the Cybermen, and you find out how they were created. Not like the last episode of Doctor Who.
Yeah, there's a little bit of conflict there, but not... Well, they made it work a little bit. Yeah. Because, actually, it's one of the first... I think it's one of the first Big Finishes, successes that they had. And almost to everybody who's worked on New Who has a lot of respect for Spare Parts. So they... Whereas it's not directly in continuity because it is Big Finish, I think you'll find a lot of people who work on Doctor Who feel like it's in continuity because it's such a great story and they can't think of anything better.
And a lot of the author who wrote Spare Parts got credit for the first Cybermen story in the new series, the 10th Doctor story.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Right.
Because of some of the parts they took from the same storyline. But where I was going with it was in that story, part of the Cybermen, you know, the computers, as they're going through programming, the whole mainframe goes down, and you have people starting to remember who they were, but they were already in the metal bodies. And it was horrifying.
It's horrifying.
because you have people going.
Yeah, I don't
want
to ruin it for anybody who hasn't seen it, but there's some really horrifying elements to it.
Wow.
It may be one of the most horrifying Cybermen stories. Okay. I think it is, really. More so than anything they filmed. Because you're using your imagination, too. That's a great thing about Big Finish. Mm-hmm. But anyway, as far as the ones that were actually filmed, do you have any personal favorite Cybermen stories?
Oh, sure. Well, I'm a big fan of The Tenth Planet in and of itself. Even watching and knowing what the Cybermen would become and how they would be used well and used not so well in the future. If you can watch it without all of that in mind, they're just so weird. Mm-hmm. Those strange voices they have and, you know, the cloth mask that's on them. And the whole thing is just so strange and so bizarre that I revel in watching.
There's a big build-up to their entrance.
Yeah.
And so when they finally do sort of reveal themselves, mm-hmm. There's that... It's a classic now scene of them all bursting out of their cells, right? And about how many, and it's just so incredibly well done as far as an introduction of a new race, a new villain.
Well, that's what I loved about Tomb of the Cybermen, because to me, that's my favorite from the Troughton era, and to have the huge wall of cyber sleep chambers and then busting through the cellophane.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's why awesome. You're looking at me like,
I think that's one.
No, but I was
episodes.
Tracking with you because they were covered up.
Yes.
They were wearing cloaks for this, so you couldn't see all the crazy weird stuff attached to them until they go inside and they take the cloaks off and they're these bizarre creatures.
I got mixed up.
But it was, what about you guys?
Well, you pulled Tomb of the Cybermen from me.
Okay. You can say it.
What do you love about Tomb?
Well, I was going to go in the new series. I really like Nightmare in Silver.
Oh, really?
I do. But I'm also a sucker for, like, the abandoned amusement park aesthetic. Okay. So that could be a big part of it. and I do not care for Time of the Doctor, but I do care for the Wood Cyberman.
Interesting.
I think that was interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's no reason they would have to be metal and plastic specifically.
Right. Just, you know, don't go out in the rain.
Water seal.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Finish it off with the deck. You know, fix your Cyberman. Okay, what about you, Mike?
Mine is the invasion. Just because for me, that's when they were still, you know, very challenging enemies for the Doctor before that. But then they're suddenly in London, and they're suddenly where people, you know, where humans are, and they're taking over, you know, and the march down the steps of the cathedral, which they mimic so well in the tenth or the 12th Doctor's era, you know, when they were arriving in Death in Heaven, you know, just that in that scene sticks out in my mind, and then you begin to remember. Mm-hmm. Okay, they're actually where you don't want them to be. They're at your home base, essentially.
No, exactly. You know? What about you, Mikey?
I love the final, the real big meeting between the Cybermen and the Daleks in the 10th Doctor era. That I mean, once we realize that, the play on that they have, it's just so well done. It lives up to it because for decades, they'd never really met, they never really encountered. We always wondered, you know, who would face off there, who would be better. And it didn't disappoint. It was insane, and it was well written, and it was funny.
The Daleks are definitely sassier.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. But I will say that, you know, those early episodes too were really creepy when it came to with that introduction of the Cybermen. I mean, having Martha Jones's cousin, right? Is that?
Yes.
And everybody who was working at Torchwood at the time going into those rooms with plastic and then suddenly disappearing and whatnot was a really effective way to reintroduce them there. I thought that was well done.
It was interesting because I always love it when they do surprises on Doctor who the villains are. And it had gotten very, like, the Revenge of the Cybermen and, you know, Attack of the Cybermen, you know, and it's like, okay, Attack of the Daleks. You know, you always knew who the bad guy was. Mm-hmm. But then came Urshak.
Yes.
And they did not reveal, even Doctor Who magazine did not reveal who the bad guys were for that. And for Urshak to come out, And, you know, you didn't even know it was the Cybermen until at the end of the second episode.
Mm-hmm.
And it was one of the better, you know, surprises. It's just like, oh, you know, same thing with Invasion.
Yeah.
And everything, because that's the best type. And the Cybermen are, I always feel like, they're more like conniving. They work behind the scenes a lot. And, you know, they can control, you know, people through robotics and stuff. And sometimes you don't even know. Invasion, you had the humans, you know, betraying them, you know,
yep.
and such to go for the Cybermen.
Yeah.
And Earthshock is kind of unique as well, because it's one of the times that I remember that the Cybermen actually engaged in, you know, tactics instead of just mass attacks. Like the Cyber leaders in that one were, you know, okay, let's do this, let's do that. And they showed a little more emotion than most Cybermen ever do.
Yeah, they did. The
confrontation between the Cybermen and the Doctor seemed really personal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We remember you. You know? So, but that's one of the great things with the Cybermen, though. And I love how every time you see them, they change just slightly.
Mm-hmm.
They upgrade. Mm-hmm. It's not staying static. Because, no offense against the final episode, it was great seeing the original Cybermen back and seeing, but I like how they showed even on the space station that they evolved, you know, because it's hundreds and thousands of years because it's closer to the black hole. So I thought that was a neat effect. So you got to see all the different versions of the Cybermen in one story.
I like that Doctor Who embraces that about its villains. And yeah, they change over time because things change over time.
Mm-hmm.
And if they go back to an earlier time, like something earlier in the Doctor's timeline, the villains are all created to reflect that.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to find the modern day Cyberman earlier in the Doctor's timeline. You're going to find that what the Cybermen looked like then.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of franchises, Star Trek, that don't. And it's
Klingons. Nice. We got about six different versions of Klingons, so but they're
more on the way.
Yes.
And the thing that differentiated the Cybermen from the Borg for me is we're speaking about Star Trek. Because by the time I'd gotten to Doctor Who, I had seen a lot of Trek, especially Voyager, where they made the fear of the Borg kind of sidelined it as, okay, now we're defeating them almost weekly sometimes. And the thing that really drew me back in with the Cybermen was in the Tennant era, where he actually took the time when the Cybermen went down to go over, you know, I'm so sorry. He put a human face back on that enemy.
Mm-hmm.
And you realize that you're killing human beings inside there. He's doing what he doesn't want to do to save the rest of humanity.
Sure.
You know, it gives that emotional punch back to these enemies that you don't get from the Borg anymore.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, it was really well done the way once in the finale when Bill was converted at the end, how they showed how she, like, looks in the mirror and just sees herself fine. I mean, she has no clue that what she's become. I mean, that's how...
We got that with Oswin in the Dalek, too.
Oh, that's true.
Yes.
Because that was Oswin. That wasn't Clara.
And if
sometimes the dialogue that the actor is speaking, even if you have trouble reconciling that with the way the Dalek or the Cyberman actually talks, that's okay because the concept sells it.
Yeah. It was neat because, especially with that episode, you know, you had Bill, you know, going through, and it almost seems like they did the whole scenes twice, once as her as a cyber.
Sure, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And once as Bill. And I thought how they went back and forth, the direction was just beautiful with that.
Yeah.
But I think that was also a case because with the Cybermen in general, that part is wiped out. And that part wasn't with Bill.
Yeah. And I think that worked really well. I'm glad they reintroduced the Mondosian ones again, because I don't know if that scene, those sequences, would have worked with the new design as well. I like the new design, but there's something about it that screams more robot than Cyberman to me.
Sure. Yes.
Well, now they look like they're designed by Tony Stark. So.
Well, yeah, they took out a little bit of the creepy humanity element of it. They made it look like a cool toy, which I want that toy, but they don't really frighten me as much.
Right.
Designed by Tony Stark. Crossover!
Well, he designed Ultron, so why not?
There you go, yeah.
Although I did, I mean, I haven't seen all of the classic stuff, I admit, right here. But the something that got me out of the season finale was that the bar, the head bracket, was, well, this will take away the pain.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
that,
yeah,
that little touch was just like...
That explains that why it, it's there.
It, yeah. And it makes it... It adds another level of terror to it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you... Because in so many ways, the pain is going to keep you fighting when you're in a situation like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, if you are basically drugging somebody into compliance, that's what that is. Mm-hmm. Like it's...
Yeah, that was one of the most that was one of the most chilling aspects of that episode to me, was when they actually figure out that those non-bar Cybermen are screaming pain all the time.
Yeah. Oh, and that was just horrifying. And they said, "Oh, we'll fix it," and they just turned the bar
on. Yeah. Yeah. Oh,
I was on the edge of my seat, like, I don't know if I can finish this episode now.
Another thing I thought they did really well with that with Bill was that they started her off with just the chess box,
right?
Mm-hmm. And so I've heard this. Fortunately, I haven't experienced it yet, but some of you may have. If you have a traumatic accident, you might wake up in the hospital with no memory of what actually happened to you. So she had that moment of looking down and saying, "My God, what happened to me?" And now you've got this thing attached to you, and you can't move like you used to. And, you know, as we would find out later, they're in constant pain.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a nice little touch of her gradual conversion that I think brought back that horror that we used to associate with them.
And that was just cold of the Master in that episode, just saying, "Oh, you know, you left that back on the table," you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, just...
Creepy.
But it's neat to see, you know, they've explained the lack of humanity with it. And that's what makes him such a great villain, because this is a possibility where humanity can go, more than being stuffed in a tank and becoming a Dalek.
And look what happens when you lose that humanity. Look at what they can do without a second thought. Look at the destruction they can cause and the pain that they can cause people.
Sure.
A lot of it in the goal of removing that pain from everyone else. They're almost benevolent in a sense, because their aim is to make everyone one of us.
Right.
You know, and so they want to help you, but it means destroying who you are to help you.
Oh, they don't think they're doing anything bad. They think they're helping people when they're invading the planets and stuff. We talked about that in an earlier panel. Basically, you know, the best villains are villains who don't think they're doing anything bad, that they think they're doing the better for humanity.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what the cool thing about it is.
What is it? The villain is the hero of their own story.
Exactly.
Right. That's right.
Exactly. And I see the Cybermen as that.
Yeah.
Very much so. What about anyone out there? Any thoughts or anything?
Well, I was just going to say on that same note, too, talking about... them not realizing that what they're doing is taking over worlds, is that in the finale, the latest finale we saw, and originally the reason for the Cybermen was because they were trying to upgrade to get away from the smog. They basically destroyed the bottom level. They were upgrading themselves to get back up to the top levels. So to them, it wasn't, we're changing our bodies to take over other places. We're changing it because we have to adapt to the situation that we're in.
Yeah.
Well, exactly.
And that's really defined a lot deeper and a lot more in depth if you listen to Spare Parts. You figure out exactly why they were created. And it's not for any evil purpose. It's because that's humanity's last hope.
Yeah, this is what they're doing to survive.
Yeah.
And they think they're a better... That's what humanity's evolving to.
It's either that or die.
Exactly. Right. And they want to bring everyone that way.
It's the phrase I'm sure we all hate. It's the slippery slope.
Yeah. Right. No, that's true.
The longer they stayed that way, they became to want to conquer.
Mm-hmm.
So exactly.
That's what everybody means, not what it had to be.
Well, exactly. And it's... The thing, it's like you said, it's the two sides of the same coin.
Mm-hmm.
And you have people who are, you know, it's the scientists who are creating it and creating, you know, the cyber life. They're not thinking, this is what I'm doing to save you guys. I'm not doing anything to do anything bad. This is what we're doing to save our race from being swallowed from the atmosphere that, you know, because the atmosphere on this planet is starting to leak through. Mm-hmm. And now we need to do something to survive it. So we have to create these suits, or that's what they were calling them, mm-hmm. in the storyline. And so that's what basically how the Cybermen came about. And, you know, they just, at first it was just the workers who were going to become that way. But then they just needed the more material. So it was just pretty cool to see.
So,
howdy.
Hi. Question.
Sorry, it's your line.
In terms of bad, I guess this would be an out of universe question. In terms of the bad Cybermen stories, and I'm sorry, but.
It's okay.
What was that called?
Nightmare and Silver.
Nightmare and Silver. And
what was Neil Gaiman thinking?
And the Seventh Doctor and that Ace story. What's that one called?
Silver Nemesis.
Those are, I would say, bad stories. And what do you think the problem with those are? In the sense that you think they just... I mean, we know what the problems are, but when they're just... such bad stories, do you think that someone was like, okay, like with Neil Gaiman, he was pressured to do this probably because, you know, Moffat wanted a Cyberman story? I mean, what do you feel makes the difference between making a bad Cyberman story like those two and great ones we've had, to the point of where you're like, you're laughing or you're cringing at what you see?
In terms of
how they put it together.
Well, I know, kind of reading about like Nightmare and Silver and stuff like that, Neil Gaiman was actually attempting to make them scary again, because he had that feeling that they had become impotent as enemies, right? So I think what he missed is what we were talking about just a few minutes ago, where there is no humanity in those Cybermen. They're just a marching mass of silver. You know, and there's nothing to be afraid of in that case. The biggest fear of Nightmare and Silver was, at least for me, was, is the Doctor going to make it out of here okay and in one piece?
The microphone.
No, sorry. You know, is the Doctor going to make it out in one piece? Because he was the one who was being assaulted the most with the thing on his head. I don't know.
Yeah. No, basically, I agree, because what we had been seeing a lot of times... the Cybermen had almost become laughable in some ways. They had, you know, a lot of, oh, let's just wipe them out with gold, or let's just take care of this real simple, let's with the giant steampunk Cybermen attacking London, or, you know, something. So it was just, this. What Neil was trying to go for was trying to make them scary, more mysterious, more, and I just don't think he got to the point that he did that. I think what happened... with the season finale, I think they brought the scary back to the Cybermen.
Yes.
And that's what we, I think, we wanted to see.
Mm-hmm.
Think we had a question?
Back to the genesis of the Cybermen, I haven't seen anything before Aquasim, or maybe like one or two episodes.
That's okay.
I'm not familiar with that. Or the,
we'll still like you, don't worry.
Or the one that was audio, like you're talking about. But I'm familiar with now two genesis of the Cybermen, the parallel world.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And the one we just saw. I'm not as familiar with the will of the people, but it seemed like in the parallel universe, it was not the will of the people. It was one guy saying, I have the right to live. I'm going to do this.
Mm-hmm.
Versus mm-hmm. almost seemed like it might have been a... Well, I mean, it was the master, so I guess he said he was the president and convinced him to do it. So, but how does that go along with the any other genesises there are of the Cybermen?
Okay. Good question, because that's a really good question. All right, so I was thinking about this. I think there are four factions of Cybermen currently running around in the Doctor Who universe. Mm-hmm. There's the ones from Mondas, right?
Yeah.
Then now we've got these, with the finale, we've got these ones from this faction of Mondasians,
correct?
Right?
So like the Black Hole Mondas.
Right.
Yeah.
We've got ones from the parallel universe that we created with the Cyberdyne. Tenth Doctor,
mm-hmm.
right?
Cyberdyne.
Yeah, the Cyberdyne ones, and then we've got who were the ones that attacked Craig?
I don't know if they ever made that clear.
They never made it clear.
Who were they?
I'd almost say those were the Cyberdyne.
The ones that were still left over from the invasion?
Oh, yes.
Oh, you mean from the one in the shopping mall?
Yeah.
Yeah, they said in the episode that it was a group that had somehow ended up going back in the time stream and falling back in time from the next Doctor, was
okay.
Yeah.
Or something like that. But they had the C on their chest. Yeah. They would have been parallel world ones.
Yeah, they were all parallel worlds. Yeah.
Okay, so
anytime you see Cybermen with the C on their chest, it's the Cyberdyne.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So those are factions from the parallel that are still hanging around our universe.
Because you never... The Wooden Cybermen one, I think, were...
Yeah, the ones in the Neil Gaiman ones. Where did those come from?
Those were the Mondasian ones. Yeah, so that was the first... Moffat came out and said, those were the first time you saw the Mondasian Cybermen in the new series.
I gotcha. Yeah. The new uniforms? Yes. Or the new suits?
Yes.
Gotcha.
So those were the evolution of the ones that we saw originally from the first Doctor story.
Gotcha. Okay. So three factions of Cybermen running around.
Yes.
Okay.
So I guess they used the woods.
And is that clear?
Wibbly wobbly timey wimey. Come on, you're in the perfect place for it.
Until next season.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Then, you know.
And that's actually something I just thought about too with the Pete's World ones, the ones from the alternate universe. The genesis is still we want to make people better.
Yes.
But the point on that one that was freaky was that, well, humans did it to themselves.
Yes.
Yeah.
They put in the earpieces because they want to be connected all the time.
But that was just a take on society anyway.
Yeah,
you know,
that was a really good modern take on it. I did think that, you know, because at the time everybody had the Bluetooth earpieces. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and now you don't even see people wearing them half the time anymore.
Now that seems so outdated.
Yeah. It's like, oh, that's so early 2000s.
That's so tense, Doctor.
Out there.
We were talking about the humanity of Cybermen and how that sort of makes them that much more terrifying. But none of you brought up my favorite Cybermen episode.
Do tell.
Which technically is a Torchwood episode, so...
Oh, Cyberwoman.
The Cyberwoman is terrifying with just watching her slowly...
Convert.
Yes.
Just wanted your thoughts on that episode.
It's not regarded as one of the better episodes of Torchwood. That's not to mean that it's, you know, it can't be anybody's favorite. I like it. I think
it turned Yanto gay. That's what it did.
I mean, it's a good Yanto episode. I mean, I think that was the first time that his character really got something more to do on that show.
Got to explore his backstory in that one.
Yeah, and I thought the idea was there. But I don't know if the execution was as great, but that conversion process was, you're right, creepy.
Because you've heard other people, even Bill, in this final story, she said she could hear the voices in her head starting to take over.
Mm.
And you saw that big time in the Cyberwoman story, because she finally succumbed to it, and she was becoming fully converted.
Right.
Wearing a cyber bikini or whatever that
was. That was not great.
Yeah. So, but yeah, it was really neat to see that because they had never explored that on Doctor Who before. Mm-hmm. And Torchwood was the perfect place to do something like that because Torchwood was more adult. The microphone's making its way.
Hi.
Hi.
When she's walking, should we have
stomp?
What's up?
I thought it was kind of interesting. For the longest time, they just sort of said, well, you know, on Mondas, they decided, you know, they're going to take the cybernetic technology in this direction, and it just sort of turned out they turned into Cybermen.
Mm-hmm.
But then in the new story, it's like, okay, like a million or so Mondasians get away from Mondas. They're running away. They get into a jam, and they have to use medical technology to survive, and they do the same exact thing. It raises this weird question, which is there something inherent in cybernetization, the concept of cybernetization, or the path they take that would make any civilization that uses this turn into Cybermen of some sort or another? Or is it something specifically about the Mondasians, their society, where their path, their ideals and beliefs lead them to go down that road? I'm very curious if the show's ever going to address that.
Well, and here's the added element to that, too, because, and this is really heavy spoiler, so forgive me, but at the, in Spare Parts, it's revealed that there is no way that they could have reached that level of Cybermen infiltration without using an element of what the Doctor had. They actually, so the Doctor is responsible for creating the Cybermen because he provided a template that they could use. And they didn't make the direct connection in the finale, but I'm kind of led to believe that the Cybermen on the ship would not have reached that conclusion without the Master's influence.
Oh, no. He's orchestrating the entire thing.
Right. Mm-hmm. So there's your answer.
You guys have to get close.
Is the Time Lord influence that caused them to go that way?
Yes, I believe
very
so.
Very much so.
Yes.
And I think...
mind blown.
I really think, especially in the final, I think the Master influenced how for them to become Cybermen. I think they might have gone a completely different direction, but he shoved them in a little way.
Yeah, he's like, I know you guys.
Yeah.
But that's not a new thing for Doctor Who either. No. Look at Genesis of the Daleks. Yeah.
No, exactly.
You know, I mean, most of his villains, it turns out he created himself.
No, exactly. Even the Master himself.
Yeah.
Well, exactly, and that's where they were going with it, because mm-hmm. in the spare parts story, he had his choice to either walk away from it. He wanted to leave Mondas, but Nyssa actually wanted him to stay and help the people. And that's what led to the creation of the Cybermen. Mm. But in the season finale, it was the Master doing the same thing. And so as he pushed it forward, it was Time Lord technology, mm-hmm. basically, that created the Cybermen, as the fourth Doctor did with the Daleks. So
I had just finished listening to the Eighth Doctor story, Spear of Orion.
Right.
And what struck me about that episode was there are times, like we've mentioned, that we see the human being afraid because they're being converted. But that was the first time I actually got to see, like, the Cybermen trying to survive, like the will of them trying to survive after being, like, almost eradicated to the Ion Storm and that.
Mm-hmm.
And that was just, it was a new thing for me that I don't really think it's even been too much in the actual show itself, unless there's some classic episodes I haven't seen.
I'm not familiar with that storyline.
On TV, you haven't really seen that kind of... That's why that story was fairly unique, because you don't see that with the Cybermen. You see the Cybermen basically battling until they're obliterated.
Mm-hmm.
Or the Doctor... Look at what happened when a good man goes to war. You know, when you have Rory, you know, confronting the Cybermen. And, you know, all the ships start blowing up and everything. And he says, do I need to say anything else? You know, it's just... That was classic. But you don't have them, you know, trying to survive, like grasping, oh, this is our final moments or anything. Even in The Next Doctor, you don't see that. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So. This is my brain. Do the Cybermen create... Or are there any way that they make more Cybermen other than upgrading people?
Or humans?
Are there Cybermen that have always been Cybermen?
I don't think so.
I don't think so.
In fact, I might be mixing them up with the Borg, but wasn't there a reference in some story to even small children getting cyberized, that they start very early on, and then they just...
The Borg have incubators.
Add bigger bits as they go on.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But
sure.
I could be making that up in my head.
Right.
Because
I'm just wondering if, like, the Cybermen who have a will to live... are the ones who've never known anything else. But there aren't Cybermen who've never known anything else.
No, they've talked about, you know, them doing children and stuff, but because they basically don't take the bodies. They take, like,
the brain
and everything. Yeah. So, because even in referring to spare parts again, the daughter who gets converted in that story, you know, oh, you're so much bigger, you know, and everything when she came, and then they took off the mask and it was the daughter's face still underneath of it. That was just... You know, like it was like that. So I'm assuming if they take children or infants, they use just brains and everything. I don't think they use... Because, like, even in the season finale, the Master was saying to Bill, well, all your parts were left, basically, on the table.
Mm-hmm.
So, got another question.
Well, just a question going along with that too, just using the brains, do you think there's ever a possibility of using different different species or different aliens to make Cybermen out
They touched on that actually in the Doctor Who Star Trek The Next Generation crossover comic. Mm-hmm. They touched on like Klingons getting converted and other species that were not humanoid being converted into Cybermen.
And I don't think Doctor Who itself has ever done it yet.
No, not on screen. The Borg do it all the time.
Yeah.
Well, sure.
Yeah.
I'm trying to figure out exactly what the Cyber Shades were in the next Doctor, though. Those weird ape things.
Oh, the bears or whatever they were?
Yeah.
I got the impression they were some kind of android. Like, weren't there cyber androids in Earthshock 2?
Yes.
Yeah. Where they have a humanoid form, and they can go around and do things, but they don't have, I guess, the will that the Cybermen have, because they used to be sentient, intelligent.
Well, that's why you didn't know it was the Cybermen at first, because they had the other androids.
Yeah.
And so it was interesting. I'm glad also they don't use the Cybermen every season like they do the Daleks and everything. So it's almost like hate to say it, it's a treat when the Cybermen show up.
Yay.
But it's like, oh boy, it's another Cyberman story. All right.
Overuse is definitely a bad thing.
Yeah, most definitely. And the great thing with Doctor Who is that there's always new stories or ways to do it. It would be great to see, especially because the storylines of Doctor Who are getting more complex and more mature in some ways. And I could see them going along with showing what happens to children or other alien species that the Master runs into, or the Doctor runs into. And especially with a brand new Doctor and a new showrunner, I think there's the world's endless, basically.
Yeah,
and I think
I wouldn't be surprised if, I mean, the whole, I mean, from what we've been hearing, the whole series is being basically, it's a
soft
very
reboot.
Soft reboot of everything. So I would imagine the next time we see the Cybermen, they'll be a little bit different.
It's interesting. There's a drawing out there. I think it's up on, you can find it on Google or DeviantArt. It's a timeline of the Cybermen. They're in a case, and you see all the different versions of the Cybermen. It's a drawing that somebody did. It looks amazing.
Yeah, I think that's a Paul Hanley.
Yes, I think so. And it's basically the newest Cyberman busts. It's shown busting through the case.
Right.
But it's great because you see even, you know, stuff from the Big Finish storylines and even showing future evolutions of what the Cybermen look like from the Big Finish stuff. And some of them are like 8-9 feet tall with, you know, real slender, getting rid of what humanity looks for. So implementing, hey, maybe they're going off of different species also. So it's a neat drawing. Look it up on Google and everything. It might actually be the cover to this episode. You never know. So, but it's kind of cool, and I just think the Cybermen always entertain 99% of the time, and I think go back and watch some of the classic stuff. Moonbase is coming back out. I think they're re-releasing it on DVD, and I think with animated parts to it now, and I think it's definitely going to be worth checking out. The Second Doctor and the Cybermen were great together and everything. Those are some of the best Doctor Who stories. You know, if you get a chance to see Moonbase, if you get a chance to see Tomb of the Cybermen or Invasion, I think it's going to be definitely worth people for checking out. Mm-hmm. I don't think you'll be disappointed. So I think that's really cool stuff to talk about.
Yes, awesome.
So
we even went through the whole thing without mentioning the worst thing about the Cybermen ever.
What is that, Mike? You brought it up.
I hate to do this. We're on such a high. They made the Brigadiers the Cybermen.
Oh. Just try not to think about that. That's what I do.
He is still a Cyberman.
Cyber Brig?
Super Cyber Brig.
No.
Yes.
Zooming out there, saving the day in his cyber suit.
I almost expected him to have a little mustache on.
I'll give you this, though, to maybe take it to a high place again. If you like the idea of a Cyberman retaining their humanity and going out and doing good deeds, you want to seek out comics featuring the character Croton. the Cyberman with a soul. And I say it that way because he's continually referred to that way in the comic book captions. But he was a cyber dude who the process didn't quite work on him. So he retained some of his sense of self and his individuality. So he became a vigilante, a force for good, and helped out the Doctor a few times. So
cool.
That's I need to seek that out. That's
we got a question in the back from the guy with the hat.
Actually,
on.
Just a comment. Just to say, if you don't like the concept of Cyberbrink, you definitely do not want to go to YouTube and look up Cyberbrink.
We're doing that now. We're only going to do that now.
There is a video that was made, I believe, at a Comic-Con that is hilarious. It's Cyberbrink to the tune of Spider-Man. Oh. And it is great. It is brilliant. And they've acted it out, and it's awesome.
Way to turn a negative into a positive. All right.
Wow.
On that note,
thank you, YouTube.
Thank you. That I can't say anything else. Join us again in 2 weeks with our Station Who, where we are going to the second Doctor era, and we are going to be looking at the Seeds of Death and looking at the Ice Warriors facing the Doctor. Should be a lot of fun. I've never seen it before, so this is going to be cool to be able to do that. You can find us up on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or wherever else fine podcasts are found. We have postcards up here. We have, you know, the ESO Network. And if you liked our panel, please, please, please rate us under Brit Tracks. Give us 5 stars. If you didn't like us, give us 5 sarcastic stars. That's all we have to say. You know, just give us 5 stars, folks. Thank you very much. We appreciate it. We are the Earth Station Who podcast. We'll see you soon.
Hey there, everyone. It's Mike. I just wanted to give you a quick note to let you know we have a little surprise at the end of this episode for you. At DragonCon, we were very fortunate to be able to attend a press conference featuring none other than Alex Kingston, River Song herself, in person. Thanks for sticking with us and enjoy this interview.
I need to put a little sort of like a bubble gum. Maybe I should use it as my podium and stand here like this. Put my water there and here I am.
Oh, wait, that's perfect. Wait, do that again.
My fellow Americans.
I vote for you.
In a heartbeat.
I would definitely
vote for Sean for president.
All right. Yes, this is a sort of chair. When I was growing up, there was a... I don't think he was American. I think he was... maybe Scottish or something. He was a singer called Val Dunican. And he had a TV show. He always would sing on a high chair like this. I'm not going to sing to you, okay? Just let you know.
River Song Unplugged.
River Song Unplugged, yeah. Although actually, John Barrowman's having a karaoke night tonight, so you might get some River Song Unplugged.
Oh, very nice.
Okay.
Well, what would be your favorite karaoke song? Are you go-to?
It's not what would be my favorite. It's what I could sing in my register. Because most of the karaoke that I hear, it's kind of the singing register is so high. You know, everybody, all the songs sort of sound like they've been sort of like auto-tuned higher. And I have such a deep voice, so it's more what song I can find that is in my register. I think the only one I've found so far is Nancy Sinatra's These Boots Are Made for Walking.
But hey, I could sing that.
So with Jodie Whittaker now being announced as the first female doctor, was there any thought that they might bring you in for that role at all? Was it ever discussed? Did you throw it out there?
Oh, no, I never threw it out there. I mean, that would mean I would have married myself.
That's legal in some states, so...
I love the fact that River is her own person. And she ultimately, I mean, she gave away all her regenerations to save the Doctor. So that kind of, I don't think, could well, mind you, it's Doctor Who, anything can happen. But I'm quite happy for River to be a separate spirit from the Doctor's spirit, because then it just gives more opportunity for them to have adventures together, as opposed to her having an adventure with herself. Sorry, that's a bit inappropriate, isn't it? Somebody over there is going to have to leave. She's laughing so hard.
You've been over your career, star of big series in America and big series in Britain.
Yeah.
What is the difference for you between the two, working on a show in Britain, working on a show in America?
Craft service. Hands down, craft service. I liken, it's quite interesting actually, because, I mean, you know, the BBC has been an institution for so long, not just in Britain, but across the world, really, in terms of its production. And But the BBC working day tends to be a little bit similar to working on a low-budget independent movie here. So you're very aware of in a way, the lack of resources when it comes to comforts. So, for example, filming in Cardiff on Doctor Who, the trailers that we're all given are sort of like old caravans from the 1970s. Very, very sort of, you know, smelly, mouldy carpets, and not particularly a nice place actually to sit and relax. In fact, maybe that's the deliberate. Suddenly thought, maybe that's the reason why. And certainly, I mean, my gosh, when I was doing ER or even Arrow, when it comes to sort of like craft service, you know, there's tables of food laden, and in fact, you have to learn not to go to craft service, otherwise sort of the pounds get put on. But there is no craft service in England. There's just, at a certain time in the day, somebody will come with a tray and cups of tea and slightly sort of curled up sandwiches, if you're lucky, or some soggy biscuits. And that's it. So, yeah, craft service is the difference.
I know this isn't your first Dragon Con, so I'd love to hear your thoughts on coming back and sort of the overall take on how it's different to other conventions and what makes it special.
Dragon Con is in a different league. I came here for the first time last year, and I flew in from Toronto. I had been at the convention in Toronto, and so I didn't arrive until, gosh, it must have been about 2 a.m. Coming off that flight, and I just assumed that I would sort of get to the hotel and it would be all sort of just like quiet, silent. Maybe somebody going around with a vacuum cleaner, you know, ready for the next day. And I thought I had walked into a scene from Blade Runner. I got out of the car and I was in this dystopian world with sort of just like crazy people in bondage and you know, beer, and there's a Chewbacca standing over there, and I was just like, what is this? It's mad, but fantastic. And I had such a good time last year. I was determined to come back. And this time I'm actually, I'm daring to, when my day is done, I'm daring to actually go out and do some people watching, because that's the thing, that when you're working behind the desk and doing photo ops all the time, you don't really get to see and experience the Dragon Con in the way that all of you do. And I'm just longing to just watch people and look at their costumes. And so I did a little bit of that last night, and I intend to do some more of that tonight.
Will you be incognito while you're
absolutely
out in costume?
Well, what's your favorite cosplay that you've seen?
Oh my gosh. I mean, there were coming up the escalator yesterday, I was going up and you know, people were coming filtering down, and there were like 10 Roman legionaries sort of just coming down the escalators, all looking terribly serious, some on their cell phones. I was like, this is fabulous. And then there was some sort of very jittery, large mice, kind of, they were brilliant, actually, because they had this whole kind of, like, movement down, and there were two of them, and they were just walking around doing this sort of strange jittering, and I was fascinated by that. You know, it was a whole performance, and they were in role, as it were, and they weren't going to drop that. Yesterday, there was a whole group. I mean, I love this, because there are people that obviously get together, and they sort of... they think of a film or sort of a theme, and they all then contribute. I mean, there were a group of people who I think they were being the contents of an aquarium. I don't know. So there was somebody walking around, and they were sort of just like a giant goldfish. But then there was a woman who was... I mean, there was Neptune, and, you know, then there was another sort of, like, fishy woman, and then there was somebody else who was, like, I don't know what they were, a starfish or something? but they all walked around together as a group. Maybe they were a tide, you know, rock pool or something. I really don't know. But anything goes, doesn't it? I mean, it's just amazing. Amazing.
Well, you know, Doctor Who fans have had a chance to see River... kind of expand on her character in the Big Finish audios.
Yeah.
I've listened to both volumes, and I love them so much, and I think we really got to see a different side of River.
Yeah.
So can you kind of speak a little bit more to how her characterization differs in the audios versus the television series?
Absolutely. Funnily enough, there are some fans who dress in River's clothes from the audio recordings. So, I mean, that's sort of like, oh my God, they are very, very... sort of like hardcore. I love doing the Big Finish audio stories because, first of all, I think they're actually very well written, and the writers absolutely they take the show seriously. They want to keep what they're creating at the same sort of standard and level as the stories that are on the television show. And I think the production values are really extraordinary. And the writers get who we are. I mean, they're obviously massive fans themselves, but they really are contributing to that world. And what I've enjoyed joining that this company is that I really get to time travel, because I'm doing stories with Paul McGann, with Colin Baker, Sylvester McCoy. You know, it's sort of like it's endless. I've got some more coming up, and I'm not going to tell you who I'm going to be doing those stories with, but it so it gives me, as River, the opportunity to sort of believe that she really has had relationships with all reincarnations or incarnations of the Doctor. And we get, because you're listening to it, everybody who listens to these stories creates that their own version of whatever the world... that the story is set in. They create their own vision of that in their head. So everybody's idea is going to be a little different, which I love, because I think rather than, in a way, radio dying, this is keeping it alive, and I think that's super important. I don't think... I mean, I really don't think River differs to how she's portrayed in television, precisely because they are so careful to stay true to all of the characters that have been created from the TV show. But I love it. And actually, the food there is amazing. Oh, my God. In fact, most actors say yes precisely because of the food.
Do you have a particular story that out of the Big Finish that is your favorite right now?
Probably, oh, God, what's it called? The I'm going like this because it's clockwork. It's the storyline with Paul McGann. I can't remember now the title of it, but it's the clock. Something to do with the clock. Time.
To piggyback on that question about the Big Finish, now you actually surpassed Liz Slayton as working with the most doctors of any companion. Do you have a favorite doctor you work with?
Well, they're all the same. It's all the same person, the same spirit, just different physical incarnations, but ultimately they're the same. So I can't really answer that.
How is the preparation different for Big Finish audios as opposed to actually being on the television show?
If truth be told, I mean, there isn't that much rehearsal when you're doing the television show. There's a lot of rehearsal for all of the technical stuff. So typically what happens is that prior to a scene being shot, if it's a scene that involves any kind of stunt, or if it involves any kind of alien enemy or anything like that, or there's anything technical, they will spend ages sort of working on that and refining it and making sure it's all fine, and then they just say, you know, action, and then we have to wing it. And interestingly, and I don't think it's a good thing, but it sort of seems to be the way television is going, or certainly on Doctor Who, is the actors are, in a funny sort of way, we're the last people to be considered. Everything else is the thing that carries the most importance in terms of people making sure that that's all going to work. And I think it's actually, probably, it's not that we're neglected because we're not important. I think they just assume that we know exactly what we're going to do and we're going to do it perfectly. But it can be a little frustrating sometimes because, as an actor, you want to also be given the chance to just rehearse and try things out. And time is so limited, and, you know, time is money. So as long as everything works technically fine, they'll then say, OK, we got it, let's move on. Whereas as an actor, you might want to go, you know, I'd like to try and do that and give it a different spin. But you're not given that chance. So that can be quite frustrating. Whereas with Big Finish, you get into these glass booths, and they're sort of arranged in a horseshoe shape, and we can all see each other. And you have cans on, so you can hear everybody as well, but you can only hear them through the cans. There is absolutely no... There's one run-through. We all just read it goes by pages, really. So it's like scenes. We record each scene individually. And a scene might last a page. It might last five pages. So you have to sort of stand there and you have to have your pages arranged so that you can read them without people hearing the, you know, the pages rustling or whatever. And... we'll read once, and then they'll record. They'll record one, and then if there's any little slip-ups, or if they feel that somebody could interpret a line differently or something like that, then they'll say, "Okay, let's go back and let's just pick up this section." And so you'll repeat that section. The great thing is that because you can see everybody, we laugh a lot. I mean, we. And I'm not sure actually whether they add like bloopers at the end of the box sets and things, but certainly there's a lot of laughter because, you know, we're watching one another sort of pretending to kiss or you know, but there's always running. There's always Dan running because we're not allowed to run because then we'll sound like a herd of elephants. And so, you know, there's whenever we're running, I love to look because I see everybody just going, like, it's just like, it's crazy. It's like, you have no idea what actors get up to, really.
What projects do you have coming up? What queer can we see Alex Kingston next?
I actually just heard somebody told me here, I didn't know, but the Canadian show Shoot the Messenger that I had done, I guess it was 2 years ago we filmed it, it's just been greenlit for another series, so that would be great, because that means that I'd be going back to work on that show and expanding the character of the newspaper editor. But I have just recently not permanently relocated to England, but I've moved back just for a little bit. So I'm hoping that come the end of the summer that I'll start looking to do theatre work there for a bit, which that's my first love, really. So, and I did, a few years back, I did Macbeth with Kenneth Branagh, and that sort of just kind of got all of those theatre juices bubbling, and I'd love to go back on stage again for sure.
Do you have a dream role?
I'd love to play Cleopatra. That's one of my dream roles, I have to say.
Can you talk about a scene that really touched you, whether it was during filming it or watching it back later?
On Doctor Who?
On Doctor Who, yes.
Actually, I have to say, it's interesting because with all three Doctors so far, there's been a moment where it's been difficult for me to sort of just hold myself together. And obviously in the Silence in the Library story arc, it's where River decides to sacrifice herself for the Doctor. And when I watch that back, I don't get emotional at watching the character of River doing that, but I get emotional when I see David get emotional, because his character, his Doctor, isn't kind of like that, or he sort of holds that back a little bit, and certainly not having known him other than just working on those two episodes, to see him suddenly, to see it get to him, that gets to me. There's a moment with Matt Smith where, again, it's always where River and the Doctor have to say goodbye. Mm-hmm. All those moments are the ones that when I look at them, it makes me get a bit teary. And certainly, I can't watch the one with Peter Capaldi, the husbands of the Doctor. That last scene was so hard for me to shoot because even though we shoot out of sequence, that scene they left till the last moment to film. And I, of course, know what's coming up now that she's been given her sonic screwdriver. But yet, of course, River doesn't. She has an inkling, but she doesn't know. And so I had to work really hard not to cry. And I didn't succeed. And we had to do that a couple of takes because I just started bawling. And again, then I saw Peter, who, again, he's tough. He doesn't show or share those emotions. And the last few moments when we were filming, and I was looking at him going, God, you're tearing up. Don't do that, because that's not helping me. I think it's important to, those moments are sort of, in a sense, few and far between. And because they are, it makes them all the more poignant, in a way.
We have time for one more question for Alex.
How are you enjoying boxing? I heard you took up boxing.
Oh. I like it. Oh, my God. wow, it's exhausting. It's absolutely exhausting. But yeah, I had a go, and I thought, well, maybe I'll just do one and that'll be it. But I kind of got hooked. I had three lessons, and I'm actually quite strong. I'm going to try and keep it up.
I want to try to promote a battle of the sexes that you and Sean Pertwee, I think you guys do.
Yeah.
He's been doing it a long time,
yeah,
though.
He'll
so.
Lock me out. Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
You have been listening to Earth Station Who, a bi-weekly pop culture podcast dedicated to all things Doctor Who, featuring talents from across the universe. All topics on the show are the sole opinions of the individual and are used for entertainment value alone. You can subscribe to our podcast up on iTunes, Stitcher, or follow our blog at www.esopodcast.com. You can also follow us up on Facebook, Twitter, or Google+. If you enjoyed the show, please leave feedback up on iTunes.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at esonetwork.com.